You've lived a great life and done well for yourself. But what mark will you leave on the world? How will you inspire future generations? Stan Miller and Katie Beth Hand have helped thousands of people answer exactly those questions. If you've ever wondered, what will be my legacy? You're in the right place. Welcome to the Your Life, Your Legacy podcast. Now, here are your hosts, Stan and Katie Beth.
Well, welcome everyone to the Legacy Stories podcast. My name is Eddie James, and we are just so excited today to have Bob Sewell with us here today, estate planner here in Phoenix, Arizona. Let me just go ahead and share a little bit about everyone about Bob. Bob Sewell is the host of the popular podcast, Is That Even Legal?, which is now heard in 87 countries and can be found on Apple, Google, and Spotify, as well as most other podcast platforms. He is also a leading Arizona probate litigator, meaning he gets involved when there is a dispute regarding trusts and estates. Bob has authored such articles as The Four Financial Planning Documents Every Arizona Needs and How to Bulletproof Your Estate Plan. He's an equity partner in the law firm Davis, Miles, McGuire, and Gardner. Bob, welcome. We're so excited to have you today, sir. How are you doing?
Pretty good. Excellent. Hopefully my eulogy will not be that. But thank you for having me on.
Yes. We're glad to have you on. Well, let's go ahead and dive right in. First question, let's go ahead and kind of go back in time a bit. So why did you go to law school? What drove you to go to law school?
Oh, it's really boring. I mean, I was a window cleaner. Okay. That's how I put myself through school. And the first time I sat down to do my taxes, I thought, wow, this is really complex because I'm doing my, you know, I'm doing my business taxes, right? Because I ran my own business. And I thought, and, you know, I'm here, I am providing a service, a window cleaning. And I thought to myself, hey, if I could knew this law stuff, I can charge a lot more for my services. It was really a dumb analysis. And, but it's got what got me started thinking about it. And the rest is history. And that's how I ended up at law school.
That's great. And then could you share a little bit about what was the transition from law school to estate planning and litigation?
Yeah, I was doing commercial litigation. And when I graduated from law school, I thought, okay, this is what I want to do. I want to be the best commercial litigator out there. I want businesses everywhere to come and seek my advice. And I was working toward that, and I just didn't feel it, you know, as I was doing these cases. It was okay. And no one in my firm was doing probate litigation. Mm. And I go to my boss at the time, and I said, hey, why doesn't anyone do probate litigation? And he says, it sucks, you know. Something like this. And I'm like, well, why? And he says, it's just a bunch of fighting families and yada yada. And he gives this parade of horribles. And I thought about it and I thought, that doesn't seem so bad. And then he hands me a case. He says, this is 12, 15 years ago. He hands me a case and he says, hey, you know that attorney that left the firm? Yeah, well, she didn't take a file with her that I thought she was taking. And it goes to trial on Monday. And this is Wednesday before Thanksgiving. And he says, it's a guardian conservatorship. And I said, well, what's a guardian and conservatorship? I had no idea. And what it is it's when you fail to properly estate plan, get your powers of attorney in place, someone's got to step in. And the court is the one who appoints that person. So he briefly explains it. He doesn't even explain it that well. I read up on it for the first time. I figure out what I need to do. And I take it to trial on Monday. I meet my client Saturday. I take a trial on Monday. And I win the trial. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't because I was so brilliant. It just that the facts of the case showed that the best thing to do was for my client to win. Mm. That's all it was. And then it dawns on me, oh, this area of law is about helping people. This is what I'm missing in my practice. I'm not feeling rewarded. I'm not feeling like I'm helping people. And so I've taken that mission throughout my career. And the first things I always ask people is things like this. It's, hey, look, what are your goals at the end of this litigation? And is your goal to sit down at the end of this litigation and possibly have Thanksgiving dinner with your family member? And if that's one of your goals, I want to help you reach that goal. Now, that's not legal advice, right? That's helping people. Let's walk through this. What's this going to do to your life? What does winning look like? Because oftentimes people want fairness. They don't want to win. They want fairness. They want to have peace in their life. So that's what sort of drove me into this area of law. And I haven't left, and I've loved it ever since. But he's right. It ain't for everyone. I have a hard time convincing associates to come join me in this area. They're like, nah, I don't like, we do a lot of math in this, believe it or not, in probate litigation. And they're like, I don't like to do fractions. Well, you're not in this field, you know? So.
Thank you. There you go. I hope the audience can really hear the heart behind your answer, especially the heart of the teacher. Next question that I really feel, and that you really kind of shared with us, you know, how you really like to help people, kind of give them some peace. I would really like to know, what does it mean to you to be a probate litigator now that you've done this for, you know, 15 years or so? You know, what does that mean for Bob?
Yeah. And again, it's about me helping people navigate the most difficult time of their life. Mm. The death of a loved one. If you've ever have a loved one die, it makes your head crazy. You know, you're sensing that loss. You're frustrated. There's regret a lot of times. We die messy. And my job is to say, hey, let's think about what this is going to do to you. You know, what's the cost involved? Because, you know, there's a financial cost. There's an emotional cost. There's a spiritual cost. And I don't know. Does that answer your question? What it means to me is to counsel. I guess that's what it means. It means to counsel someone to the next area. Now, that might mean a no holds barred litigation. That might mean that. That might mean bringing the other side to their knees through litigation to the table. It might mean something else.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you, Bob. So as he's saying here, you know, ladies and gentlemen, you know, advocacy is means advocacy. So, you know, tell me about how did you end up getting to the current firm with Davis, Miles, McGuire, and Gardner? What was that journey?
Yeah. So when I applied to this firm, it was a different firm. The way it operated, it was a brand new firm. They were growing like gangbusters, and they had all the typical growing pains. And I needed a job at the time, and my brother knew the founding partners of the firm. At the time, it was Greg Miles and Charlie Davis who ran the firm, and he hooked me up with an interview. And it didn't go well. And that was with Charlie. Then I went back and interviewed with Greg at a couple years later, and I needed a job again. And Greg's like, no, I don't think you got the experience I need. And so I emailed him a day or two later and said, look, I need a job. You need a worker. Let's work it out. Let's see what we can do. And he said, sure, let's try you out. And I just haven't left. You know, I'm part owner of the place. So
exactly. I love the tenacity. Great story. Great story. Bob, what would you say is an ideal client for you? What does that look like for you?
Yeah, the clients, people who come to me generally have difficult litigation. A difficult problem, or they want to estate plan. And they're looking at challenging issues to estate plan. So I did a lot of work on a file once. A guy wanted to estate plan. There was some issues with his former estate planning. His new estate plan wasn't going to look good. based on the former issues. And he says, and I want to get rid of two, you know, children from my estate plan. And he says, and they'll file a lawsuit when I die. They're not going to like this. So, I mean, we were guaranteed a lawsuit. So then we worked through this. Okay, well, what would it take? You know, what would it take to defend the lawsuit? He's still alive. And we said, look, if you want your estate plan to stick, do 1, 2, 3, 4, or whatever it was. And he does 1, 2, 3, 4, and his estate plan sticks. It was a very difficult lawsuit for the kids to win. So the ideal client is someone who has a very challenging issue. The other thing is, because of my commercial litigation background and the real estate background, people who have challenging business issues, you know, we die with businesses. They might have businesses that need to take care of. They might have problems with real estate, you know, title problems with real estate. And my job is to orchestrate the professional. So they might have tax issues, debt issues, and I bring them all together and figure out a pathway forward. So ideal client, I don't know, but what typically gets referred to me is the stuff that other people are unwilling to do.
So would you say, even in that, knowing that you have a very high skill set and have for quite some time, would you still say, are there any kind of common issues that you feel that you help with?
Common issues, undue influence. Mm. You know, the law has yet to catch up with with the reality of what's going on out there. When I have dementia, I have some sort of organic brain disease happening inside my head. The dementia is caused, not always, this is an overgeneralization, from the disease of my mind. And if I am a super intelligent person, say I've, have a high IQ, 150 IQ, I don't know. And I have dementia, my mind, I might be able to fake it a lot. You know, maybe my IQ goes down to 100. I'm still better than quite a bit of the population. But I'm vulnerable because even though my intelligence is masking my dementia, my undue influence, not my undue, my dementia, my cognitive incapacity, I really don't have the ability to resist. I'm relying on other people. And, you know, I might be saying platitudes. You know, and in the law, however, they have this concept of the lucid moment doctrine. Okay. And it's from years of history, you know, hundreds of years of history, that I might have dementia. I might be mentally, you know, diminished, but if I'm having a lucid moment at the time I'm creating my will is somehow valid. Well, we know from science that that's just not really happening.
Right.
Lucid moment is really not there. They might be oriented to time and place, but they're incredibly subject to undue influence. And so now what does an attorney do when someone has, you know, a buck to spend on a will? They give them the will, right?
Right.
And are they motivated to spend a lot of time to make sure that this person is really, really not subject to undue influence? Are they meeting family members, CPAs? Are they really diving deep and sitting down for coffee with this guy? No. They say, who do you want your estate to go to? Type it in. And then when they go to testify, they're motivated to testify in that the person was having a lucid moment. I call it the look good to me
right
speech. Now, I know that's very, very cynical, but it's what I'm seeing. Now, again, I'm seeing the most difficult cases. So undue influence is something that is incredibly pervasive right now. And, you know, the aging of our population really, really is underserved, right? We're not taking care of our elderly really well right now. The professionals involved are not seeing the bigger picture. And the elderly are getting taken advantage of. And it's time and time again.
Thank you, Bob. I really do hope that our audience is having just a pensive moment as they think internally, think about their own family and those whom they care about, their loved ones, to ensure that that legacy is protected.
Oh yeah,
and that we're doing the right thing. And we're putting that plan into place to ensure that, again, that there's some peace of mind for everyone involved. So no,
and you're hiring quality professionals, right?
Right.
When you need an investment, do you have a quality institution that's helping you? Because when you're young and you're spry and you're on top of things, you may be able to handle it yourself. It may not be a big deal. But when you get older, and you need that advice, do you have that in place? Do you have that trusted professional? When you want to make your estate plan, do you have that trusted professional? When you have your CPA, your trusted professional, and think about these things, and you talk to them openly. You know, Eddie, my son, Bob, he's been smoking crack cocaine for years, and I can't give him $100,000, okay? So you have to have that conversation. So when Bob sues and said, I'm a heck of a guy, Eddie's like, I'm certain you're a heck of a guy, but your dad is worried about your crack cocaine use.
Right.
Not that any Bob would ever do crack cocaine. I mean, we are pure as a driven snow. That's a joke.
I love the snow line. That was great. That was great.
Yeah.
So Bob, how can someone get a hold of you? How can they best find you? What does that process look like?
Yeah, they could call my office, 480-733-6800. We service Arizona in this area. This is what we service. We don't service people outside the state for this area, but we service people who have issues in Arizona. We have offices in New Mexico and Utah for other areas, and our law firm handles all areas of law here in Arizona. And nearly every area of law in New Mexico and nearly every area of law in Utah.
Excellent. Thank you. What are some common misconceptions that you see when it comes to estate planning or to probate litigation that you're seeing time and time again? Common misconceptions.
Yeah. The magic beans trust. I'm going to have this trust. And this trust is going to protect me from all creditors. It's going to protect me from the government. A trust for the average person, a trust is a probate avoidance device. It's also a way if you are in the one percenters, if you are in that 12 million plus category of estates, it's a way to protect yourself from getting significant tax advantage if you use your trust properly at death. So that's the average use of a trust. It's not for creditor protection generally. Now, you can organize a complex estate plan for creditor protection, and you have LLCs and limited partnerships, and you have foreign asset trusts. You can do that, and that is going to help you with your estate plan. And I've litigated those issues, and it really does help. It really helps you protect yourself and your children from creditors. However, your average trust is just probate avoidance for your average person.
Thank you. Any stories, of course, with withholding client, information of tell us a story of estate planning going wrong.
Yeah. Here's a story that I think a lot of people could relate to. And this guy, he was a good old boy. Imagine a good old boy, a guy who he likes to carouse, he likes to drink, and he likes women. Okay. And he writes his brother and he sends him an email and says, I just did my estate plan. I just did my will. And this guy is in contemplation of death because he's beat his body to death with, you know, with alcohol and who knows what else, right?
Right.
And he writes his brother and he says, I want a third of my money to go to my best friend, Frank. I want a third of my money to go to you, you know, client. And I want a third of my money for a party so I could entertain the drunks down on Monroe Street. Okay.
Okay.
He wanted a massive party and he was worth $600,000. You know, he didn't write this down. He didn't, if he really did do a will, he didn't write it down and then keep it for safekeeping. He didn't follow the steps necessary to protect what he wanted to happen. And you know where his estate went? To his unacknowledged children.
Oh.
I really don't feel bad for the guy, right? Because he lived a hellish life and he just, right? But nonetheless.
Right, right.
If you don't plan, the government has a plan for you. And that plan may not be what you want. You know, and in Arizona, it's different in other states who are more archaic in their laws. But in Arizona, I could be on my deathbed and I'm looking up and I'm perfectly clear and my family's gathered around and my friends and my loved ones. And I say, you know, I got the will and everything goes to my wife in the will, but I want to make some changes to my will right before I die. And I want my Ferrari to go to my favorite friend, Eddie, right? I'm going to give you the Ferrari, Eddie. Okay. And I want my cabin in Aspen to go to my best mistress, Julie. And I want my place in the Bahamas to go to my children. And then wife, you could have everything else. And everyone could hear this. And I'm clear as a bell and I'm lucid. And everyone knows what I want. And I suddenly pass. And then you say, Eddie, you say, hey, when do I get the Ferrari? And you go before the judge. And the judge said, did Bob write it down? Did Bob follow the rules of how we create estate plans in the state of Arizona? And they say, no. Well, did Bob, you know, is this really what Bob wanted? Yeah, it's really what Bob wanted. We don't care. The will controls. So don't leave it to chance. Don't get yourself, don't think you know the character. Don't think you understand. Have someone do it who knows what they're doing.
That's great. Great answer. Biggest challenge. What would you say is your biggest challenge, Bob?
Yeah. The biggest challenge in this area is, does the cost of the litigation match the value of what we're going to win? So when the litigation process is so cumbersome, there's so many protections against bad actors. In order to get all through all the process to protect yourself from the bad actors out there, protect the court system from bad actors, you got to go through process after process after process. Well, in order to do that, it costs a lot of money. And if you've had $5,000 stolen from you, well, that's a lot of money, except it's not. $10,000, $20,000, that's a lot of money, except it's not.
Right.
That's the biggest challenge. That does the value, the cost of the litigation, it doesn't make sense in terms of the value of your loss. A lot of times it doesn't. And you just have to say, hey, I'm sorry. It's not worth it to you.
Opportunity cost risk, right?
Yeah.
You're correct.
Yeah. Yeah.
Last question, Bob. As we come to a close, anything that we did not share that you would like to go ahead and share with us before we depart today?
Yeah. There are the following estate planning documents that everyone must have. And then there's a bunch of them that are nice to have and would be helpful. But these are the ones that will protect you in life. Okay. A durable power of attorney, which is something to manage your affairs, your financial affairs, when you lack the capacity to do so.
Okay.
A healthcare power of attorney. Okay. Someone appointed to manage your healthcare needs when you lack the capacity to manage your healthcare needs. A living will, also known as an advance directive, which explains how you want to be treated if the worst were to happen. Do you want the heroic measures or do you just want to die in peace? And the last one is a will. And those are the four things you must have. You may choose trusts and beneficiary designations and other things, but let me explain. If you don't have that durable power of attorney, the courts will take care of you. And they will take care of you in such a way that they see fit. And it may not be what you want. They may do something different than you desire. Same thing with your healthcare if you don't do that. And it exceeds, these two powers of attorney are relatively inexpensive in comparison to the litigation costs that are out there. So to get through the guardianships and the conservatorships, wherever you denominate them in your state. Okay, so get those things. The other one is the living will. I have seen people, in my opinion, torture their family members.
Mm-hmm.
Their family member lacks the capacity to make a decision regarding their health care. And they keep this person alive artificially for years and years and years and years. And I have seen this happen, and it is a huge, huge problem. And I do not fault the family member. I don't fault them. Because when you are put in the position of making the decision of life or death for your father, for your mother, for whoever the loved one is,
right?
You're in that position. It's an impossible decision to say, no, I really don't want the feeding tube for them. That's an impossible position to put your kid in. So you take the choice away and you go and you say, this is my living will. This is my advance directive. This is what I'm willing to put up with. This is what I'm not willing to put up with. And Eddie, you're my favorite son and I love you. And I don't want you to have to make this decision. I've made it for you and I hand this to you. And I say, please respect me. Now you have every opportunity to not burden your conscience. Your conscience won't be burdened. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're living in peace while also giving the opportunity for your heirs and your loved ones to do the same. As you stated, you know, because death is messy. I love that golden nugget because death is messy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Bob, I knew when my research team said that we should reach out to you, that I knew that this time was going to be just a time of just not only just knowledge and wisdom, but more than that, giving people an opportunity to really see the difference of what advocacy looks like. You know,
yeah.
Sometimes people just feel that there's really no difference. And I really feel that you've that you've just really kind of helped set that standard with us today. So again, this is Eddie James with Legacy Stories Podcast. We've been completely blessed to have Bob Sewell with us today with Davis, Miles, McGuire, and Gardner. We look forward to seeing everyone again in the next Legacy Stories Podcast. Bob, thank you again.
Thank you. It's been super fun. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the Your Life, Your Legacy podcast with Stan Miller and Katie Beth Hand. If you enjoyed the show, please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. To find out more about Stan and Katie Beth, go to PinnacleLegacyLaw.com. You can also find links in the show notes.